Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
The leaflets have been delivered, the sound bites worn out, the Facebook algorithms have been played, and the punches have definitely not been thrown by anyone. Hello, and welcome to the Red Box Politics podcast in the Times. I'm Matt Chorley. It would be hard to describe what a miserable election this experience has been, were it not for the fact I know you will feel exactly the same. But we are here to help with the sort of straight, honest public service broadcasting that you don't even get from public service broadcasters anymore. How to survive election night. What the seats to stay up for. What food should you eat and drink. Which channel should you watch. And what's it like to be at the heart of the action, discovering that you're not about to run the country after all. All of that coming up, but don't forget, if you want to join us for the autopsy of this campaign, we've got a special live Times Plus event for Times subscribers at the News Building in London Bridge. Join us at 8:30 on Friday morning with a stellar lineup with the likes of David Aronovich, Philip Collins, Matthew Paris, Alice Thompson, Daniel Finkelstein, Tim Shipman, Camilla Long, Henry Zeffman, and our very own Esther Webber to explain what has happened and what happens next. Tickets at mytimesplus.co.uk. So, in this final special episode of the podcast before polling day on Thursday, we try to answer all of those questions about what to do on polling night, calling on former government advisers, political journalists, and the people who really know what they're talking about, like the food editor of the Times. But first, Red Box reporter Esther Webber is here with your indispensable guide to the seats to watch for and when to sleep. So, Esther, you've crunched the numbers. You've looked at the times of when the seats are going to come. Talk us through Thursday night. If you can, have a little nap Thursday afternoon.
Yes, that's ideal because in general, polling day itself is quite quiet. There's a limit to what broadcasters can say. So try and take it easy on Thursday evening as much as you can. If you're anything like me, what you'll do is you'll stay up for the exit poll and then go to bed. And then you'll end up staying up all night. If you do stay up all night, then I've put together a bit of a list of where are the interesting spots to watch.
All the big TV programmes start at 5 to 10.
Yeah.
So that we get the exit poll, it all drops at 10 o'clock. If you want to know how the exit poll is put together and how it happens, listen back to the John Curtis episode we did a couple of weeks ago. So 10 o'clock exit poll, what do we do then?
And that's a huge moment, because if you remember in 2017, it showed a hung parliament with Tories' largest party. And there was this huge shock because I think there was only one poll that had predicted that outcome. And some people were just adamant that it couldn't be true. They couldn't believe it.
Now, the weird thing about election night is there was this lull, there's the excitement of the exit poll. Then 2-3 hours before when can we expect the first result?
The first result should come in around 11. And normally they're sort of limited interest because they're safe Labour seats in the North East.
Sunderland being the prime example of the one that, for reasons unknown.
Yeah, the time to beat we hear is 10:49, which was the earliest ever for Horton and Sunderland. So that's the first one on my list, is 11 p.m. Horton and Sunderland, expecting it to stay Labour by a kind of safe margin, but it will give us an idea of a swing, and then potentially whether this potential idea of a movement of voters towards the Tories in the North East is filtering through.
Because places in the North East which voted for Leave, if they look like there's a swing towards the Tories, a bit like how on the night of the EU referendum campaign, people expected somewhere like Sunderland to vote Leave, but it was by a bigger margin than everyone expected. And then that sort of, from that moment on, set the tone for the rest of the night. Then how long do we have to wait before a good one, an actual seat to watch?
Well, the next one on my list is 1 a.m. So there's a big gap.
Good couple of hours of solid drinking before you get to there.
Yeah, there'll be some sort of fairly predictable places filtering through between 11 and 1. But around 1 we get Workington.
Ah.
And there's been a lot of attention on Workington, the need to win over Workington Man. And I think it's one of the first Labour seats we come to, which under the MRP projection was a toss-up. So it could potentially go Tory. And if it does, that's a big moment. We can sort of extrapolate that maybe other places like Workington are going to be lost to Labour for the first time ever. The next one on my list to watch, again, quite a big gap, so maybe go away and get a coffee, or bananas are always
bananas
my favourite.
Unless you're David Miliband, yeah. In which case, steer clear of bananas.
Or Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Or Jacob Rees-Mogg, who famously is terrified of it.
2:30 a.m, we will get Angus in Scotland, which is one of the several Tory-held marginals north of the border. I think the Tories have been sort of growing in confidence in Scotland in recent weeks, and what had earlier been predicted to be a possible SNP sweeping the board may not come to pass. So Angus will be one to watch for the picture in Scotland. Scotland is particularly interesting because there are so many three-way and even four-way marginals. It's less predictable.
Well, a lot of them have got very small majorities.
Yes, we've got one in North East Fife, currently held by SNP, which is a majority of just 2 votes, which I always like to think of as his mum and dad.
if you could be sure.
And a lot of people really seeing that Scotland could hold the key in this election. I've picked out Gower, which is one of the Labour-held seats in Wales that could go to the Tories, so that will be interesting to see whether there's a big shift in Wales.
And this was one of the things that during the 2017 campaign, there was talk of a sort of Tory takeover of Wales, and then obviously the campaign played out differently, that didn't happen. Again, we've seen, I think even this week, a poll in Wales, I think it was a YouGov poll, which put the Tories not ahead, but really narrowing the gap with Labour, enough to make, I think, sort of 7 or 8 gains. So again, Gower's one to watch.
Yeah, and again, this could not come to pass. The margins are really narrow here between a Tory majority and a hung parliament, but Gower, if you're looking at Wales, is one to watch at 2:30. Around 3 a.m, there'll be some interesting seats for a number of reasons, not least of all, this is kind of when we get into potential scalp territory. So at 3 a.m. we'll get Esher in southwest London, which is the seat currently held by the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab.
This is the one the Lib Dems have really got their eye on.
Yes, they've been going hell for leather in Esher, and again under the MRP, if the Tories have a good night, he could well hang on to it. However, if the Lib Dems do win, then maybe they're having a slightly better night than people thought. On a similar theme, around the same time, so 3 a.m, we'll get East Dunbartonshire, which is the seat of the leader of the Lib Dems, and she's under pressure there from SNP. So obviously that would be a huge moment if she did lose.
It's pretty unusual to go into an election where two leaders, both Boris Johnson and Jo Swinson, have what are considered marginal seats.
Yes.
There were things to go very badly for them. They could end up losing their own seat.
I'm pretty sure that the last time a sitting leader lost their seat was in 1906 with Arthur Balfour.
Wow.
So that would really be a huge moment. On a similar theme, at 3 week at Beaconsfield, which I've chosen just to have one of the refugees in there, the people who've left their parties.
That's Dominic Grieve.
Because Dominic Grieve will stand there again as an independent. And most of the people who've done that, who've left to become independents or Lib Dems, seem to be at high risk of losing. Grieve is the one who we think has the best chance.
Not least because he, although he's not standing for the Lib Dems have stood down.
Yes.
So he could potentially marry his loyal vote from local people with some Lib Dem vote, and that might be enough to get him over the line. I'd be interested to see.
Also 3 a.m. we have South Belfast, which is a big target for the SDLP, so could break the DUP Sinn Féin duopoly that we've had the past few years. 4 a.m. is Canterbury, which was a big shock win for Labour last time, so they'll want to hold on to that. 4:30 a.m. is Uxbridge, which is the Prime Minister's seat. If the Tories have a good night, he's not predicted to lose, but by then he could have an idea of whether he's going to be able to form a majority government. The only, I think, real big one after that is 5 a.m. If you're up then, you've really been hitting the coffee hard. That's when we'll know if Dennis Skinner, the long-serving Labour MP, will hang on to his seat in Bolsover.
The Beast of Bolsover. And he should be the father of the house, if he hangs on as the longest serving.
Yeah, he would be in line because him and Ken Clark entered at exactly the same time. But Ken Clark was ahead of him in the queue to take his oath.
So he was technically an MP for a few minutes longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. What is your plan? We haven't really discussed this. I think my plan is to be in the office for the exit poll, send an email to Redbox subscribers, sign up at thetimes.co.uk/redbox, then get a bit of sleep, and then come back into the office around the time all those results are coming out, sort of 3-4 o'clock, to do a morning email a bit earlier, hopefully with some sort of result on it. But what's your plan?
I have a horrible feeling I'm going to end up staying up all night with some sort of cat nap around two. But it's hard to look away at these big moments.
Well, in 2017 I had high hopes of going to bed, and instead I thought the result was so funny I got incredibly drunk and had no sleep at all, and ended up coming in, I think, in this very studio recording a podcast. So hopefully nobody noticed. I did ask some other people this morning how they would get through the night. John McTurnan, a former Labour spin doctor, said, don't sleep, sleep is the enemy. Gabriel Milland, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, used to work with Dominic Cummings. He said, this election, it'll be the staff Christmas party at a specialist vodka restaurant, followed by nausea, pain and regret. I'm not sure if that's a comment on the result or not. Janice Turner, Times columnist, disco nap in the afternoon, make bed on sofa, flit deliriously in and out of consciousness, watching TV until dawn. John Brady makes a point, none of us have slept in years, Matt, come on. And Kenny Farquharson, Times columnist in Scotland, said he also recommends the disco nap, which, as somebody pointed out, a disco nap is supposed to be preparation for a night of sheer hedonism, rather than seeing if John Curtis was right, which is what we're all going to be doing. Esther Weber, thanks very much. So that's what it's going to be like watching the election from afar, but what's it like on the inside when it turns out your party has not done as well as perhaps you hoped? I've spoken to Stuart Wood, Lord Wood of Anfield, who was previously an advisor to Gordon Brown and then an advisor to Ed Miliband in the run-up to the 2015 election, and we all know how that ended. And Paul Harrison, a former special advisor who worked on the 2017 Tory campaign and became Theresa May's press secretary in the days that followed. They both know what it's like when election night goes bad. Here they are in their own words.
5 minutes to ten on election night, you are absolutely exhausted. You have not had any sleep for 6 weeks. And it's not like just being awake. You are constantly stressed. You're always one text away or one hidden recording away from something going spectacularly wrong. And you feel, I guess at my level of seniority, you felt a lot of responsibility for every minute and every bit of it. I guess the two nights that I will remember most are in 2010 when I was with Gordon Brown. And we were in his house just before 10 o'clock on the election night. He was having a nap upstairs. About five of us were downstairs watching TV, waiting for the exit poll. And it was a big surprise, 2010, because everyone thought Gordon Brown would lose, that Cameron would get a majority, and it turned out to be a hung parliament. Suddenly there was more energy around the place, and Gordon came down the stairs about 10 minutes later and said, "What's happened?" It was quite extraordinary. The Prime Minister didn't know for 10 minutes what the result of the exit poll was. But it definitely gave us lots of energy, even though the next 5 days proved to be fruitless from a Labour point of view. And then the one I guess I remember most is 2015, which was the lowest, which was Ed Miliband losing, where the general view was we spent the whole day in Doncaster, most of it holed up in his house, sitting and talking in the garden, with messages coming in telling us that probably looked like we were just going to squeak in. And then the exit poll came out, which was a big shock to everyone. And the first reaction of that was, is the exit poll accurate?
So, I mean, the story of, I suppose, of exit polls is that, generally speaking, they're pretty good at predicting the size of the biggest party. And so, what, five out of the last six have been pretty well bang on. The exception was 2015, where it didn't necessarily look like, I think, from memory from the exit poll, the extent of David Cameron's majority was actually quite borne out. So in 2017, I suppose you delude yourself into hopefulness, thinking, well, maybe it's happened again. And certainly Lyndon Crosby was going around the office with a load of pretty despondent staffers saying, look, we haven't lost anything yet. This is the first one where I won't be in central office for a while looking at the results and looking at the exit poll when it comes out. So I'll have a blissful Thursday evening. I hope many of the listeners do as well. I suppose it divides down pretty obviously. 2015, a very good night. David Cameron defied expectations and got a majority. So, you know, there was a lot of Lyndon Crosby blowing a horn when we gained seats and general merriment. And then the opposite in 2017, where unexpectedly Theresa May lost a majority. We lined up and watched the exit poll in total silence in CCHQ because it forecast that we hadn't done anywhere near as well as we'd hoped. And it was a chattering evening, to be honest. The building that we were in, Matthew Parker Street, which is where the Tories have been based for a while now, we'd taken over some extra space in the building in order to set up what was basically a party floor right up at the top. And you had to have a wristband to be on the sort of work floor and then another wristband for the party floor. And it looked like the party floor bands would be sort of fairly prized possessions. And of course, that wasn't what happened at all, because when the results started to come in, it looked like the exit poll was right and we'd gone significantly backwards. Things weren't looking good at all. Instead of partying, it was more sort of people drinking warm beer, sitting around on the floor looking depressed.
I think the other thing to think about, just from a human point of view, is at 5 to 10 at the exit poll, you have no idea whether 6 minutes later you are contemplating 5 years at number 10 with 24 hours a day stress, but also the extreme exhilaration of being in power, or whether 6 minutes later at 1 minute past 10 you are facing the dole. You have absolutely no sense of what the next 5 years will be 5 minutes later. And that is quite a stressful thing to be thinking about. And then when you get these situations when actually the exit poll is not determinative, where actually the exit poll, as it could be in this election, suggests, you know, who knows what happens next, then you have to sort of get your energy back up straight away and start fighting again. Different people take charge at different moments. In 2015... when the exit poll came through, Ed himself was quite shocked, I think. And immediately the phones started going and we had all our team back at base in London or wherever they were. We were on the phones trying to work out what to do. The answer is you can't really do much. There's this curious period after the exit poll comes out for the next 4 or 5 hours, really before the first results come through, when all you're doing is seeing criticism or comment or remarks from journalists and from fellow politicians and others. And there isn't much you can do, really, other than prepare. So what we did was, someone in our team essentially said, right, we need to prepare different statements. If we've lost, if it's a hung parliament, or in the unlikely event that we've won. And you really just need to get process going in your team. And that was, a couple of people in our team were very good at just kicking in and doing that straight away. But you need someone other than the boss to step forward and prepare for all the contingencies. Because, you know, the boss, the leader, is absolutely exhausted, and you know, it's extremely challenging then to have the perspective you need.
She was clearly upset, and she came back to Tory central office to CCHQ in the small hours to say, well, you know, thank you for all your hard work, and I know this hasn't gone as well as we might have hoped, but that was, you know, that was a pretty emotional moment for all of us. One of the tips from a very senior person on the campaign was for some of the people who'd been special advisors and been around government for a while. This person just came over and said, try and cheer up the kids, because there are lots of people who have kind of given their time, young people who've, you know, given up 6 or 7 weeks and worked really hard. And this is true of all parties who haven't got the result that they'd wanted. And so we did try to do a little bit of that just to try and say, keep your chins up. There is also a very conveniently located bar across the road. So a lot of us were sort of into and out of Blue Boar, I think, out an old-fashioned about 4 o'clock in the morning. So either try to stay relatively dry and drink a lot of coffee, or I'm going to drink some very nice wine this year because I don't have to keep up appearances with anybody, and I can genuinely have fun. But you've got a pretty tactical decision to make, which is everyone will want to watch the exit poll. You definitely should do that because it's your best indication to see whether the pollsters over the last few weeks have been right or not. And as you say, see the direction of travel. You've then got a decision about whether you are really bothered about seeing who of Sunderland and Newcastle can beat each other in the world's most pointless race, or whether you get a few hours kip if you can, in which case stay off the coffee, and wake up 3-4 o'clock, by which point you'll be seeing a picture that hopefully means something. So I always go right through. I always stay up for the whole thing because I can't really somehow seem to govern myself into doing something sensible. So adrenaline and coffee compensates for an awful lot of failings. If you end up having something to do, you won't feel like you want to go to sleep. And to be honest, if you end up walking through the doors of Downing Street on the day, that will be more than enough to pep you up.
By the end, I think there's a real challenge after an election's finished, because it is a huge anticlimax. You are exhausted. There is some sort of post-electoral sort of hole in your life which needs to be filled. Your phone stops ringing straight away, especially if you lose. Well, if you lose, your phone definitely stops ringing. I do think it's worth thinking in advance before you go down the road of getting on that bus for 6 weeks and working 24 hours a day. Think about what the day after will look like if you lose. It's a really good mental preparation. Everyone should think about it, and particularly politicians should think about it, because I think politicians who suddenly go from being wall-to-wall covered to having nothing much to do find it quite difficult.
Stuart Woods and Paul Harrison there. Still to come, what to watch on election night and what to eat and drink. We'll be back after this short break.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Cholley. Now, what to watch and what to eat and drink on election night? There are more options than ever. So who better to guide us through this than Hugo Rifkin, Times columnist, podcast regular, but for the purposes of this episode, TV reviewer.
Only on Saturdays. Let's pretend it's Saturday.
And Tony Turnbull, food editor of the Times, which must be about the best job on the paper.
Getting there, yeah.
And,
absolutely.
And so thin.
Yes.
And so thin, I know. Well, I eat a lot of bad food as well, so that helps.
But you don't have to speak to any politicians.
No,
Amazing.
Although you do have to speak to Giles Corran. Swings and roundabouts.
Swings and roundabouts. So, Hugo, first of all, talk us through who's got the big signings. What channel should we be watching as the night unfolds?
Well, it's always a bit weird not to watch the BBC on election night, I tend to think. You know, I mean, this will be the first election in, I think it's roughly 150 years that it's not going to be presented by David Dimbleby. They've got Hugh Edwards doing that instead. Someone in The Guardian was joking that he was going to be taking his clothes off, because he's always taking his clothes off these days and posing Instagram style, but I don't think he'll be doing
Hugh
that
Edwards
much. His Instagram feed is amazing. It's more fashion than naked, I should say. That was a terrible slander. I just did. Maybe just in my dreams. But so he'll be hosting. He's got Jeremy Vine doing the swingometer. The it's sort of increasingly insane swingometer that we've got. The swingometer veered into parody 10 years ago now, right?
There was one in a cowboy and a horse or something. Dressed as a cowboy.
Oh, a long time ago, I interviewed Armando Iannucci, and the best bit of our conversation was when he was talking about the swingometer, and he was talking about this thing that they once did, where they got lots of children to paint a huge map of Britain the right sorts of colours, and he's saying you could tell that it was going to be chaos within 45 minutes, and by the end of the night, they just stopped cutting back to it. They'd abandoned somebody like Kay Burley in this gym hall and just left her there to suffer with the children. But yeah, so that's the BBC. They've got Andrew Neil in the studio as well, and they've got apparently got Andrew Marr out wandering around in various constituencies, which is a bit of a blow for him, you'd have thought. It's like, yes, you can be part of our coverage, but only out in the cold all night in December. You've got ITV, which is the one you sort of put on by mistake, really, although it's not going to be terrible. Tom Bradby.
Is that their slogan?
Yes, absolutely. Tom Bradby is chairing, and they've got Peston, Robert Peston, and Allegra Stratton as well. Obviously, they've got their big signing is Joe Johnson, which should be quite interesting, albeit careful. You'd have thought.
And interesting, last time their ITV was the one to watch in 2017 because they had Ed Balls, but crucially George Osborne.
Of course,
and
yes.
Every result that came in, George Osborne's smile got wider and wider to the point where he sort of almost swallowed his own head.
Yes, that. I'm not quite sure where George Osborne is.
No,
this
he's
time.
On ITV.
He's
again.
On ITV again. Is he?
I think they've also got Ruth Davidson. They've spent lot of money on ITV.
So I mean that will be good for the chat. You've got to make your call between the chat and the breaking news. You listen to the chat and then you flick back to see what's happening where. Over on Sky, their big signing is John Burko.
Small signing.
big name. Small signing. I mean, they could fit other people there as well, I suppose, on the chair. That'll be kind of interesting because being the speaker, I mean, I know people say he's always been partial one way or another, but
we'll finally find out what he thinks about Brexit.
Absolutely. But it'll be interesting to see how freely he feels able to speak, because he's obviously gunning for a TV gig himself. And then you've got something alternative and wacky on Channel 4. I would add as a caveat, I'm nowhere on election night. No one ever asked me to do anything on election night.
Nor me. I've not been invited to do anything.
Even the Scottish referendum, I only got bloody CNN. So, astonishing, really.
So, yeah, if you want to book either of us, redbox@thetimes.co.uk.
I'm washing my hair.
Exactly right. So, Tony, while we're sitting down glued to the telly from 5 to 10, what should we be eating? What should we be drinking? Is it just coffee all night? Alcohol? What do you recommend?
Well, I'd recommend alcohol, obviously, because, I mean, and depending on which way things are going, either sort of champagne or gin to drown your sorrows. But I think the key thing with the alcohol front is to decide when to start. You don't want to peak too early, obviously.
Am I allowed to start today?
What time is it? give it 20 minutes.
What time do you think we should start? Do we wait until the exit poll? Is it 10 o'clock?
Well, I think if you're trying to go long term and you're hoping to get through to anything sort of like approaching Uxbridge and South Ruislip or something like that, then I think you've got to start a bit later. You have got to pace yourself a bit. Really what you want to be trying to do is you want to try and simulate, I don't know, the Labour policy on Brexit. You want to keep it so sort of neutral, no one knows which way you're going. So you're kind of, well, I might be sort of drinking earlier, I might be drinking late, I might be staying sober or whatever.
Does that mean sort of alternated between alcohol and coffee?
I think that's probably a very
Labour approach to
absolutely. Yeah.
And what about food? There's a risk that you just have three bags of kettle crisps and they're all polished off by 10:15, and then you've got nothing left.
Nothing but the alcohol, which is where the trouble starts. I'd recommend probably to do something. You don't want to be doing anything which actually requires cooking during the evening, because you don't want to, having stayed up, you don't want to then sort of, you know, miss that crucial moment where something actually exciting happens, which I know apparently political aficionados say does happen. But
don't do a souffle
at sort of 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd make a nice sort of big pot of something like sort of, you know, chili or something like that early in the evening, something which you can eat at any time during the night. You can go back to it again and again and it will just sort of stay sitting there, doesn't matter if it's hot or cold,
just
or whatever,
bubbling away
exactly.
And at what point do you think we start eating all the Christmas food. How long tonight? I said, oh, just go and get the Christmas pudding.
I think I'd refer you to my earlier answer about how much you're drinking.
Okay, that's fine.
And I was just wondering if it's a political statement on election night to exploit the gig economy by ordering a delivery.
Well, do you know, in actual fact, I think if you're one of the sort of like doom mongers, then you ought to get yourself an Uber Eats, because according to them, you know, come Brexit, if that should happen, then there will be no restaurant staff, there will be no one delivering any food. So get it while
make the most of it. On the subject of Christmas, just because you did this in the paper at the weekend, who's got the best mince pie that we could be eating on Thursday night?
Oh, you shouldn't ask me that, because I can't remember. As soon as I eat them, I sort of then forget about it. I think Waitrose, did they come out top? I think Waitrose is certainly the most reliable across the board. So, yeah, no surprise there.
Very good. And so what will you actually be doing, Hugo? How are you
on election night?
Yeah.
I'll be here. I'll be writing my column for the next day. I've been invited to sort of various great fun parties that night, none of which I can go to, because instead I'll be sitting literally at my desk like I do all day anyway, watching the telly.
With a bottle of gin and a
revolver. Occasionally wandering over the news desk to find out that nothing's happened, I suppose.
At least you've been invited. I haven't been invited to any parties.
Oh, bless. You're going to be here as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, sad, isn't it?
Tony, what about sort of carbs and protein, and what should the balance be? What's the?
Well, I think probably you should go protein heavy, really, is the way. So, I mean, if you are so minded, then there's like those little protein balls, which young people seem to like eating these days. I wouldn't myself.
Protein balls? That sounds like something you give to an animal.
They're like the stuff you feed to birds, aren't they? Little seed balls and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm sure you could munch on those.
Just when I thought this election couldn't get any grimmer. Spending the night eating
like a bird.
Protein balls.
Andrew Marr standing out in the cold in Newcastle, munching on a protein ball.
Protein ball.
But yeah, nuts. Nuts are very good. I'd go for nuts over crisps, I think, probably. Slightly more nutritional value, don't they?
Bananas.
Bananas, very good, although they don't mix that well with the alcohol you're drinking.
Yeah.
You know, martini and banana, not really a classic sort of combo, is it?
And sweets. There's always a thing in political circles where when there were late nights, everyone's always been fueled by Haribos. Are they a good idea?
Yeah, no, because they'll just lead to that sugar rush and then the crash afterwards. So, you know, then you'll never make it to North Cornwall or whatever it is. Isn't that always the last one to declare?
Yeah, possibly. Or like the Isles of Scilly or something, because they have to get it back on a boat.
My sort of Glastonbury sweet consumption, my stamina snack is always a boost. Booster or Snickers. 3 a.m. Booster or Snickers. You can push on through till at least 3:45.
In recent weeks, I've become slightly obsessed with a picnic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's got everything in it. So there we are. So basically, if you want to send us any alcohol, invites to parties, requests to appear on the telly, or food, picnics, boosts, and gin for Tony. What will you be doing, Tony? You're actually going to stay
In actual fact, I'm afraid I'm one of these refuseniks. I go to bed because I know I won't have the stamina to see it all the way through. And then I think, well, I'd rather just wake up the next morning. It'll be like Christmas, won't it, seeing what someone's brought you. What Santa brought this year.
And in the morning, so you wake up, will you hit the drink then? A Bloody Mary? What would you recommend in the morning?
Oh, I'd recommend, boringly, coffee. Otherwise, you know, just keep going with the martinis. Why not?
Just martinis all the way.
Martinis all the way.
Martinis all the way. That seems like the best advice we've ever given on the podcast. My thanks to Hugo and Tony. So there we have it. Try to have a disco nap between Sunderland and 2 a.m. Try not to lose your majority. If you're watching on the telly, then watch the BBC. But if you're Andrew Marr, maybe get another agent. And if in doubt, pour yourself another martini. That is the Red Box Guide to Election Night. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss future episodes, including that one on Friday recorded live. If you want to be there, tickets at mytimesplus.co.uk. Send us any emails about how you're surviving election night at redbox@thetimes.co.uk. My huge thanks to all of my guests, Esther Webber, Paul Harrison, Stuart Wood, Hugo Rifkin and Tony Durnbull. For me, Matt Jolly, it's goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.